You're listening to.
You're listening to.
The Homo Homie Podcast.
Representing, educating, and unifying our queer comunidad.
Also, a gay craft course 101 for the hetero. I'm your host, Eric V.
And I'm your co-host, Jose Resendez.
A fun kickback podcast for all our homo homies and raza.
We invite you to download, stream, and share
to find out what's good in the hood. Hey, 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 what is up? And welcome to another episode of the Homo Homie Podcast. I'm your host, Eric V, also known as your Homo Homie. And please welcome my amazing co-host,
Jose Resendez. One of these days, I'm going to have this amazing introduction like you.
Okay, she's going to be full of energy. And speaking about energy, like, no siento muy, muy...
excited!
Yes! And the reason why is because we have a special guest today for Selena, the series on Netflix. We're super emocionado of a lot of things. And, you know, Selena has made a huge impact on this world. And just like any other artist, I mean, look at Celia Cruz and Jenny Rivera. They are major iconic figures, especially being mujeres, Latinas, that are paving ways and breaking barriers in a machismo-dominated industry.
Yes. And so, of course, you know, with Netflix releasing the highly anticipated Selena the series, we just had to do an episode, not only to pay homage to Selena, but to have like a gay Latinos react to, you know, Netflix Selena the series. So it's our honor to have, you know, Moises on that we'll introduce in a little bit. And so I do want to talk a little bit about what you just said. And it's like, what makes these artists so special? Why do we have to continue exploring these legends? You know, are we really able to capture the essence of who they are?
Exactly. I mean, Selena brought more than just her music. It was her passion, her charisma, her personality. It was that family togetherness that she had, you know, and especially to the queer community. You know, we adore her. I mean, there's drag queens that dress up like Selena. Hey.
Selena is like trending all the time, all year long. You know, it could be Halloween, you know, people do Selena. It could be drag queens at all the gay clubs around the country, around the world. Like, she is like a big, you know, go-to for drag queens. Even like on RuPaul's Drag Race, I think Valentina paid homage to Selena as well. And so many celebrities have dressed up like Selena, like Kim Kardashian and Demi Lovato. And, you know, and then we also have people like Jennifer Lopez, who, you know, is like one of my favorite people on the planet, that, you know, their careers took off with, you know, with a movie like Selena, the movie.
Yeah.
We owe a lot to Selena. So.
And one thing that makes us relate to her and stands out is that, you know, you and I are Mexican American, and she straddled that duality of being both, you know, and coming into her own and finding herself. And that's how we see ourselves, our lives, from watching her.
And one of the special things about Netflix Selena the series is that there was a lot of representation, you know. We're going to talk in a little bit in the next segment with Moises about how important it was to have women writers in the writer's room. They had two female directors in charge of this series. And, you know, Suse Quintanilla was executive producer. And, you know, there was just so much representation. And even like our girl, Noemi, who we fell in love with, who plays Suse Quintanilla, right? I know that she's, you know, openly bisexual. And so it's just amazing to see this type of diverse come together and for it to be like number one on Netflix, you know? So, yeah.
All right. And then with that being said, we're going to go ahead and go right on into our next segment with our guest, Moises Zamora, who is the creator, writer, and executive producer of Netflix's Selena, the series. We'll be right back. Hello and welcome back from the break with the Homo Homie Podcast. We are so excited. We're so happy. We're so thrilled. There's so many emotions going on with our next guest that we have on. They're from Jalisco, Mexico. They are queer based in our community. They're a major writer. This person has done so many things for the community, for himself. And we're just very, very proud. And they've also written on an Emmy-winning drama series, American Crime, and also star on Fox. And now, the big time, which is Selena, the series on Netflix. Please help me welcome Moises Zamora. Hey!
Thank you, everyone. Thank you, both of you, for having me.
Thank you for being here. We really, really do appreciate it. And, you know, words can't express how excited we are. What are you, like, feeling right now? How is this moment? Like, what's going through you since the release of the series?
A mix between Como La Flor and Mini Bomb Bomb. it's been very exciting. It actually feels very surreal because, you know, I've been working on this for almost 2.5 years, and it's finally coming to the screen, to Netflix, to 190 countries. It's probably one of the hardest things I've ever done, mostly because of the pressure and trying to navigate for the first time what it's to be a creator of a series, to lead a room of Latinx writers, to co-show run and make decisions along with an incredible production team for Netflix. So it was a lot of firsts. And so knowing that there was a lot of the higher expectations, you know, I learned that you could only do your best. Mm-hmm. And that's the only thing you can regret, you know, in the future, is that did I put 100% of myself, of my heart, of my mind into a project, into anything? And that's the things I think you could control. There are a lot of factors in making a show that you can control. You know, I'm just like one person of a huge collaborative process. And so you could only take so much responsibility, but what you can do is definitely take responsibility for yourself. And I'm so proud of the work that we're doing and that the world sees that there is kindness and compassion behind Selena, the series, and I'm very proud to say that we scored the number one slot, the U.S., Mexico, and the rest of Spanish-speaking Latin America on this weekend when it debuted. And I think, if I'm not mistaken, I think we're number 7 in the world. So we're definitely top 10. So that's an achievement. And you know, whether we want to admit or not, I think we have to celebrate that, because not only the power of Selena is that strong, but additionally, we got to share a Mexican-American family to 190 countries. And a lot of people responded. And they stayed and watched it. And so that is a proof that Latinx stories matter, that are global, that are relatable, and that Selena's here to stay.
And how important is it for Latino shows to have this type of success as soon as they come out? You know, talk to us a little bit about how it's crucial for Latinos to stick together. I don't have a better word, but like stick together and come together to support projects like this, so that, you know, shows don't get canceled, or so that we can see more stories like this on the big screen.
You know, this is a business. This is entertainment, and this is a business. And while it's been really hard to crack the sort of Latinx sort of formula, right? Because we're very diverse. We're comprised of like over a couple of dozen cultures, and within those cultures and those countries, there's even more subcultures. And so, how do you reach out to everyone and call it Latinx, you know? And I think what we try to do here is make it a very specific Mexican-American story about a very specific Mexican-American family. In this case, Los Quintanillas. You know, we worked really closely with them. This is a story that they wanted to tell. And we were really grateful to be part of that journey, because, you know, anything for Selena's, and I can't believe I'm, you know,
saying that
right now. But I mean, it's this is an opportunity to be part of something that eventually is going to introduce Selena and, you know, family story and her music to so many more generations, like millions of people. And as a result, it's, you know, her memory lives on. And we contributed to that. You know, we were part of that. And we're happy and grateful that the family was able to green light this, because they didn't really have really intentions to, you know. It was just a sort of a project that just kind of happened recently, and the right people were there. Producers had an agreement with them, and it just sort of came about. But I think that, you know, we forget that she was taken away from us very tragically. And
too soon.
She had so much potential, and she was somebody's daughter.
Yep.
Somebody's sister. And, you know, my heart goes out to the Quintanillas, because even throughout the process that were sharing the stories they wanted to, you know, that put on the screen, and they were talking about all the things that went together, it was an emotional journey. You know, it was an emotional process, because, you know, I think Suzette said in a recent interview that death is really powerful, especially mm-hmm. of a loved one. And so to that, you know, it took a lot for them to share this story with us. And I learned a lot from that process. And I am so excited that we get to spend two parts, you know, and part two will come. I don't know when, but Netflix, I'm sure, will announce a part two of the series.
We'll definitely get to that, the second part, very soon. I want to know more about also this pressure, right? Because you get the gig, you get the job. Obviously, me siento muy excited, all of those feelings. But then comes in, like, it settles in, and you're like, holy crap. Like, I'm a crucial part of telling the story of Selena that a lot of us already know, for as much as resources that we have and footage and the J-Lo movie and all that. Tell us about that pressure, and how were you able to handle that pressure of accepting the role?
I mean, it was almost like you either accept it and you handle it, or you walk away from the project. It was as easy as that.
But you didn't hesitate. You didn't hesitate to take it.
Right? Shoot.
Yeah. So, I mean, it was, I think that was part of this business in entertainment, any show. You know, it takes so much of your mind, of your heart. It's a lot of stress, a lot of pressure. There's a lot of people counting on you. And even though it feels like, you know, created by, you know, it is just like, it's such a divine job title almost. you know, it is a collaborative process. There's a lot of people right. involved. There's a lot of sort of puzzles to put together. But, you know, you do have to have someone at least trying to sort of steer the ship accordingly, you know, especially when you have to sort of make do with what you're given. And so this was a heartfelt endeavor, because I knew how important it was going to be for basically everyone that was involved. You know, my team of writers, there are 14 writers that I hired, all Latinx, mostly Mexican American, majority women, and over a third queer identifying.
Wow.
And so that in itself is a victory, because it's also unheard of. And right. And they came in also giving their 100% their passion, and went above and beyond what they were expected to do to make this happen. It's a miracle that shows happen. They come to this far. So being surrounded by that kind of level of dedication just made it easier. It really did. Because at this point, I'm doing it for them. I'm doing it for the cast and crew. I'm doing it for the actors and the cast. And I'm doing it for all those lives that are being changed because of Selena's story and her magic. And I think that what we see on the screen, what we see on the stage, when we see, you know, when we experienced through music, like, we experienced it behind the cameras. Mm-hmm. There was magic there, you know, and there could have been many moments that, like, this could have fallen apart, you know, because it's what happens with any series. A lot of series don't make it this far,
right?
You know, exactly. And they get canceled, they see stuff and nothing works out, executive producers, like, you know, leave, or, you know, leave the project, creatives, writers leave the project. And this made it through because I think everyone that was involved knew how important this was. You know, it's kind of an opportunity of a lifetime to work with a family, yeah, with the state, to be able to access all that music, you know, all those artifacts, things that we haven't seen, you know, because it's not available to the public. And so that in itself was just like, wow, this is...
Were you able to...
A lot of pressure?
Yeah.
Go ahead.
Yeah. You think? Nah.
were you able to fly down to Corpus Christi to access that those resources or footage? Like, tell us, yes, a little bit about that.
We spent a week in Corpus Christi. I spent a week in Corpus Christi interviewing Suzette, Abraham, AB, Marcella, and we took pictures of every little thing in the museum. We also saw things that Suzette doesn't share with people and the public, that she has kind of sort of tokens from Selena's life, and, you know, writings, like, wow, just some lyrics that she was trying out when she was a teenager. She showed me a page of, like, Selena practicing her signature.
Really?
Over and over and over. Yeah. And it was like, oh, yeah, the little, you know.
That's how it came to
end. Yeah. The logo was designed by somebody else, but I could still see the little S, you know, when she was, you know, practicing. It was just that really wonderful because, of course, and it's one of my favorite things to always share is that, you know, we got to see the makings of a teenager and, you know, and where she grew up. And so, yeah, we did spend a lot of time. There was a lot of hours of interviews of the things that they shared with us that, you know, they wanted to make sure that they made it to the screen because that's the story that they lived, and those struggles are like real, were real.
And did you find when doing the whole series, like, was there many challenges to it? You know, what were the challenges that you guys found with writing and with producing and directing?
Well, I think the challenges were kind of normal for a production company. This was an international company. Mm-hmm. Production. So we filmed in Baja Studios in Mexico, on the same set that the Titanic was filmed. It ultimately worked out because with COVID, it was easier to control the environment. Mm. And so that worked out because we had to sort of build sets from scratch because, you know, we're talking late 80s, early 90s. It's a period piece.
Oh, yeah.
All those things are not around, or Corpus doesn't look like that anymore. You know, it's like too modern. Like it was going to be very expensive to sort of try to bring everything back to the 80s. And so it was just easier to just build it.
And from your experience with writing for Star, I mean, did that play an important role in helping create the series, or?
I think so. I mean, I think the tone, it's different. But what I did learn from Star is how important a music-driven show, how important you have to focus on the music itself.
Yeah.
You know, it's really tricky. Had to embed musical performances into shows. In Star, they did fantasies. You go into a fantasy and they would sing a number. But for Selena, you know, we had so much footage of that, as far as old videos that were recorded, Johnny Canales and stuff like that, we tried to replicate.
I loved him. And, that was so amazing, yeah, by the way.
So like people can go and to the internet and try to look it up and be like, oh my God, they did wear those outfits, you know? And especially the gold one.
Oh, exactly.
One
of my favorite I remember that. Take it away.
Yeah.
Man, there was so much nostalgia there, dude. Like, I really did enjoy it a lot.
You were talking about, I'm sorry, you were talking about building sets in Mexico. Tell us about the timeline, because you mentioned earlier that you worked on it for 2.5 years. Where was the biggest segment of, like, filming it in Mexico? Was it this year? Was it during COVID? Was it last year?
Filming started late last year. Just a little bit after this. Yeah, or late this in November. I think it because we had to sort of work around Christian Serrato's schedule. Mm. And she was still working on The Walking Dead, finishing that sort of season. So we're just waiting for that to happen. And then, you know, we filmed all the episodes and then we got interrupted with COVID and they picked up the series again, production. And so there are more episodes. This is a 2-part series.
Oh yeah, most definitely. People need to remember that. It's a 2-part series. So I can't wait for the second part. How much time was there after writing the script, getting the green light to starting production? Was there for everybody to start, you know, working on their roles?
We had essentially written all the episodes already when production started.
Okay.
But I didn't stop. There were a lot of revisions that came after.
Mm-hmm.
That we had to, you know, work because we're still getting feedback and notes from the family. That was important to sort of implement and adjust. So yeah, so it took I kept working on that. Even though the room had closed, I had lost the virus. I kept working on that, trying to make those revisions until very, very late in the game. Until like was, spring.
We know that Suzette, the sister, was the one of the executive producers. How was everybody else besides Suzette, like Chris Perez and AB and Abraham, were they just as much involved as Suzette or not really?
Suzette was our main
contact.
She gave feedback on every script,
and she had to approve
everything. I don't know if there was technically an approval, sort of like the technicality, but I mean, if they weren't happy, what are you going to do? Going to go be like, yeah, we're going to do it anyway. It's like, good luck. No, and the reason for that is because, you know, this is a really tricky situation. It's like they are telling us what they, you know, their story and what Selena was like from their POV. And we couldn't, like, just go about and just try to create a complex character.
Right.
Because it's real life.
Because it's real life. You know, it's not a docuseries, but like, that's the thing that we need to sort of respect, is that this is what the family, you know, was sharing about Selena with us. And we need to put it together the best way possible to create a narrative. You know, but it's not like we were going to go and, you know, create the crown because that's not approved by the, you know, the royal family. And this is our royal family, right?
Exactly.
So we needed to make sure that it felt true to them and that, you know, that we weren't creating something that was not Selena. You know,
right.
In this point, we couldn't speak to Chris, so we didn't get his point of view, because this was a production with the state, with Selena, the state, and the family. And so, but we did get to interview all the family members extensively.
Yeah, we saw that Chris Perez did a post on Instagram saying to go check out the series and how much love he still had for the family and for Selena's legacy and how proud he is of her still being impactful, you know, till this day. So how did that feel? Like, did that feel like really, did you feel proud? Like for someone like Chris Perez, who may not be, you know, involved with Q Productions, and even Jennifer Lopez did a video as well. So, I think we researched some people like Eva Longoria, Chelsea Rendon from Vida, Steven Canals from Pose, Julissa Arce. Tell us about how does it feel to get these like endorsements or blessings from these type of people, from Chris Perez to J-Lo?
Well, I think that it's, you know, there are people that have worked in the industry that know how everything sort of, you know, functions and you know what it takes to put a show together. And you know, the fact that people across the globe in Latin America are reacting so positively. I mean, this one, even, you know, Selena has a lot of power. No one can disagree with that. But there's also, you know, we chose to have a wholesome, earnest sort of approach to her story because they really did have those values. You know, there was no cussing. You know, the kids were in line, you know, there was like, they were tight family. And so, and we wanted to show that, and they wanted to show that, of course. And so I think a lot of people related to that. You know, they saw maybe, you know, my family's a little crazier than that, but but they could see, you know, they could see something that looks very, very familiar for us, you know, a firm but loving, you know, patriarch, you know, a very supportive mother, but also, you know, stands her ground when she needs to. And so, and kids are, each of them have their own potential and responsibility in the family unit. And I think it's really interesting to get like all the people in my mom's church to be congratulating me because they're like, oh, I can finally see something with my kids and everyone, you know, because there's no sex, drugs, and rock and roll, you know, well, there's a little rock and roll, but, and I think that's important because I think it tells the really dire need to show that kind of storytelling, you know, that is not violent cartels or drugs, and that is depicting a Mexican-American family with values that are hard work and determination, you know?
Yeah.
Yeah. Speaking of family, who's the biggest fan of Selena in your family?
It varies, but what I'm very... I just have to say, my family, I have a brother that sings a lot of banda music, and I have another brother that sings rancheras. So it's split.
Yeah.
So there's a, and then like my sister-in-law sings rancheras too. So it's like, and they're like, they're really good singers. I am a terrible singer. So it's like, so bad that like the first time they actually heard me karaoke was to Como La Flor recently.
Pues a ver, canta por nosotros. Sing for us.
No. And they were like, okay. We can work with that. So they love her for different reasons, you know. I think we lean towards the rancheras, you know, the que creías decir una vez, no me queda más, because it's just so dramatic to sing those, right?
Yeah.
But what I'm very excited is the new generation. Like my nephews and my nieces, my goddaughters, like they're all ranging from 7 years old to 12 years old. And they're just so thrilled and so excited to start sort of like seeing them fall in love with her music and get to discover her. Sebastian, my little nephew, is like writing his first song because he's so inspired by the whole process. You know, my little goddaughter Jasmine, she's like, why didn't you let me audition for like the little girl, you know, like, and it's like, mija, because you can't sing but you can work on it. Was so devastated, but like, you know, but they're like the new generations that are discovering Selena and her music, and I think that's just wonderful.
So you also mentioned that it was very important for you to have women writers and queer identifying writers in the writers' room. Tell us a little bit more about the gay Latinos in the writers' room. Who were they, and why was it important to have these queer voices in the room?
Who were they? I didn't even ask him if I could talk about this.
Don't out them, just kidding.
Henry Robles, my co-executive producer. Eddie Serrano, producer. Jorge Ramirez Martinez, I think it's executive story editor. And Raymond, his last name, and he's my friend. I didn't want to get it wrong. Perez? Yes. I'm like, he's going to kill me. He's like, really, girl?
He has the same last name as Selena.
Raymond Perez, staff writer.
And I also noticed that you had like two female directors, Hiromi Kamata and Katina Medina Mora, right?
Yes, both Mexican.
Nice. That's major, right? Because you hardly ever see any female directors, especially Mexicanas.
No, yeah. And I think, you know, that was one of the things that we were really fully supported from the get-go. It's almost like, you know, putting together a list of people that I really wanted in the room. A lot of it were, you know, recommendations, word of mouth, people that I had known before, people that I was in writers' rooms with before, writers' groups, I should say, too. Three of those members were from the clubhouses. A group of writers, gay Latinx writers, screenwriters that are working right now in the industry. And so It was just wonderful because, you know, when you are get to bring those people and then you're supported by the producers and then you're supported by Netflix to be part of the team. And right away, and I'm very, you know, I'm a conscientious writer. You know, I knew that taking this on and being, you know, cisgender male, you know, that I needed to have like, you know, feminine, you know, women representation as much as possible. And we always kind of lead more towards like women directors from the get-go, like, you know, and that it turns out that we've scheduling, in addition to, you know, approvals from Netflix, like Hiromi was really our 100%, like, she's queer as well. That really took the brunt of the work. And Katina Moreno was also fantastic. And, you know, they made this happen. And I just hats off my whole admiration for Hiromi, because she let me see, what was it? Like 80% of the episodes, you know, she directed. So that's a feat. You know, she's like, now this is more like a series director, you know?
Yeah. And that's amazing. And from the series, from the first part, like primarily for the fans, like after watching it, what do you want viewers to take from it, from part one?
You know, I think a lot of it, you know, we've already spoken about it, but I think this just sort of gives you sort of a kind of a family, you know, drama, you know, and it tells you how each member contributed to the rise of Selena y Los Dinos. And it gives you clues on how Selena is sort of breaking away in a way that, you know, because of love, she's choosing love. But at the same time, that doesn't mean that she's immediately breaking away from her family, because we know that that doesn't happen.
Right.
You know, that does not happen. She cares very deeply about her family, and she cared to make sure that they stay, you know, all together. This was just the only way to keep Chris as well, you know, because there was a lot of stake, you know. And not only she didn't want to lose her family, but she also didn't want to like endanger people's well-being and career. And this is the way that she did it. So for part two, we're going to see a Selena, an empowered Selena, an independent Selena. She's married. She's taking ownership of her life. She is going to be making the future choices independent of, you know, because she's you know, going for a solo career at her boutiques and her fashion line.
Nice.
That was for her.
I think, I mean, we obviously can't ignore the fact that there is also critics, you know, that are going to give their criticism of should have, could have, would have, should have, you know, all of that. And they have their own opinions. And so sometimes when you're watching a show, you're like, don't go in there. Or like, you know, like you're screaming at the TV, you know, like do this, do that. And so I think that some people, when they're watching part one, they're like, no, Selena, like say this or be louder or be more bold or take action. And they forget, like, well, she was a teenager. There's family, there's parents, there's religion. There's all these factors that play into it. And we go back to this. We have to fact check this, you know, the stories, because this is what happened. We can't just make it up and she's all of a sudden this like woman superhero, you know? And so I'm glad that you just explained that you're going to get that in part two, like, don't worry, you know, it's coming.
Slow down. I mean, people don't realize that it's like the movies are different from series. And from the movies, you have to like condense everything in a certain amount of time versus the series where you have a little more leeway and it's a little bit more relaxed. And, you know, first part is massaging like her life, her journey, how she came up, family, like you described, you know, that's what the thrill is all about. And I was going to ask you, I'm like, well, why didn't you name it the Quintanillas, a Selena series? But from what you're explaining from part two that's coming up, I think we're going to know why it's Selena, the series.
Well, and additionally, look, and like I said it before, is this is the story that the family shared about her.
Right.
And this is Suzette and Abies and Abraham's, like, you know, sharing of like she was like this and she was like that. And we have to sort of base ourselves with this opportunity based on what they shared with us. You know, because I think it would have been a bigger issue if I would have taken, you know, us, the writers, made her who we wanted it to be. Then it becomes a fantasy.
Right.
And so we have to take what we're giving at face value and do what we can with it and try to create something that sort of makes sense that comes later. I don't mind the critics. I don't mind that passion. You know, I think everyone is entitled to their own opinion. And I just love to be given the opportunity to even have these conversations, to be able to say this and that. And, you know, I didn't like that. I didn't like this. It's like the alternative, not having that. The alternative was like not having a show. And I'm not just saying be grateful for what you get. That's not what I'm saying. What I'm saying is this was a series that we worked with the family. We are really proud. There's a lot of people that put a lot of work into it. A lot of living human beings that put a lot of work into this. And we wear that with pride. You know, and so we're excited to share season two with you. And it's different. We're going to see a lot more things that people have not seen. And hopefully, you know, I still feel like we won't make anybody happy, but I feel like that, you know, because there's just so much love that went into this that, you know, that joy, it doesn't matter. Like, it can't be taken away. It's you know, we know what we did and within the context that we did. And we just are so happy to be another contribution to her legacy.
And when can we expect season two to come out?
Ooh, I don't know. That's a Netflix question.
But do we have to wait a whole another year? Or do you feel like it's going to come sooner because of the demand and the ratings? You know,
but we've wrapped.
Right. You already finished filming everything.
We already filmed everything.
But are you still editing season two? Like, it's still being worked on?
Well, I can't give you more details, but we're done.
I was just wondering because you get the critics and the criticism from season one and you're like, oh, good points, you know, here and there. And so you still have time to like edit or make changes or here and there. And I don't know. No? Okay.
After wrapping up, like, when did it really hit you? Like, wow, I'm actually doing Selena the series. Like, I'm working with Selena. When did that moment hit you?
I think when you're making a show, the show can dissolve and disintegrate and disappear. So every day, it was a day that I was grateful that I got to work on this, you know, because a lot of shows, they, you know, it's very difficult, right? So, but when it really, really hit me is I think the first day of the writer's room, because everything was already worked out. Everything's moving. People have been hired. We already did the research. We're about to break the first episode or the second episode or whatever. We're going to about to break in. And we did start with the Astrodome's Gomola Flor and that sort of slowing down of that song. And it felt like a prayer because we just wanted to be guided, you know, throughout this process. And we knew that everybody came in with a lot of love and passion for the story and for Selena. And that's it. You know, we started working and that's really when it hit me, the responsibility. I think it hit everyone.
Yeah.
They're like, holy crap. Like, I think it was very emotional. And then, you know, we have like a lot of moments, especially when we got to very difficult moments in her story that also was like, oh, I can't believe you're telling me. You know, I can't believe we have to relive this. So, you know, for that reason, I can't imagine, you know, the family having to relive all of this again because it's just, if we're emotional.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. You know, so, yeah. And I think it was an everyday sort of gratitude of waking up to Bidi Bum Bum and getting to work on Selena the series.
And so what's next for you? What's next for Moises?
I started a production company with a couple of executives, and our mission is to create and produce stories, shows, films, television about people of Indigenous, Afro-Latin, Latin American descent from an authentic point of view with a global commercial appeal, you know, because we want those stories to be relatable to everyone. And we have a couple of projects in the works, actually one in negotiations right now. So as soon as we close that deal, I'll be able to announce our next project.
Nice. And that company is?
Zone One Productions.
Yeah. Okay. Why is it called Zone One?
You know, it was one of those things that kind of happened because we were chasing a Latino artist at the Grammys about last year for one of the projects that we want to set up. And it turned out, we couldn't meet him. And then it was like really late. And then the manager felt so bad and bought us a ticket back to Los Angeles, a flight ticket on Spirit Airlines, because it was the only ticket available. And I think we were giving like Zone 6. You know, the last ones to board.
Oh, man. Cheap.
It was me and my executive. You know what? This is emblematic of sometimes Latino storytelling and projects. We're always the last ones, you know? Or like one day we'll be able to be on Zone 1 and the first ones to board and the first ones with access and the first ones to put our stories up. And when we, you know, until then, we'll keep on trying. So we just named it Zone One. And so just to remind us that we want to be the first as well. We deserve to have access like everyone else.
That's amazing. I have one more question to ask you. I know that taking on Selena was big and was an important feat for you. And it's more than just taking on this project because it is an iconic legend, Selena. But I think this is more personal for you because I did some research about you. You know, you were born in Mexico. You immigrated to America. You started writing at 17. You went to Brown University. And then you took classes at UCLA, you know. And you did your thing. Your journey just started snowballing. And you're living the American dream, you know. And it touches a certain place in you. And we can all relate to Selena's story in that way, you know. What is your words of wisdom to those that are listening right now to start their dream, to start their journey?
As a gay Mexican immigrant who had to straddle two worlds and two cultures and having to defend my sexuality to live in a very authentic way, I think my words of wisdom is stay true. Find your crew, find the people that support you and love you. It may not be your family at first because they may not understand what you're trying to do, but there are people out there that you can find to support your endeavors. You know, a lot of times I found myself really questioning my journey. I wanted to be a writer. I had declared this is my life purpose. This is my calling. And everything that I did, every job that I took was to be able to continue with that goal. And it's one of those things that like, it's not something that is tangible, right? You don't get a degree and then you go to work for a law firm, you know, when you become a lawyer. So you have to find that journey yourself. And writing for me is my purpose. And so I tell all of them to just find your purpose. Figure out, is it what drives you? It could change. It could evolve into something else, but find your purpose, keep working. If your opportunities are not there, make them, build them. Don't be afraid to build them. Have confidence that where you come from and who you are is already a miracle. You know, you already have the tools to achieve the impossible, you know? And I've always believed that. And sometimes, you know, those are the very same people. And now my parents, because they don't think I'm a crazy writer anymore. They think I'm actually a professional. Now they believe that as well. And I couldn't have done it without being really true to myself and true to my calling, true who I am, a Mexican-American immigrant. And, you know, also a gay little boy with a lot of glitter dreams.
Hey! Oh, my God, Moises, thank you so much. We really do appreciate you coming on and, you know, joining us on our podcast. And shout out to Roman Navarrete, who brought you here. And where can we find you? Plug in your social media, your websites.
Instagram, Twitter, Facebook, they all, I think, have the same handle, and that is @MoisesTheWriter.
All right, guys. Well, you heard it here. So make sure you guys go ahead and stream Netflix Selena the series. It's on now. It's the first season. You're going to enjoy it. I promise you. Just watch it. All right, guys. Well, we're going to go ahead on a little break and we'll be right back. That interview was amazing. I cannot believe we had Moises Zamora on our podcast. How exciting is that?
I mean, it's awesome because you guys know that I'm such a huge Selena fan. So to have like the creator of the series was just like the icing on the cake, you know? So for just a background story, me and Eric, we applied for media credentials with Netflix a while back with the help of our co-producer, Roman. And so we were approved. And so we're super excited to be working with Netflix and being, you know, part of that whole like media outreach. And so we were able to watch Selena the series like 2 weeks before it came out. But we were under embargo, so we couldn't say a word. And it was like, it was so hard to like not say anything on social media. But here we are, you know, not only are we doing an episode dedicated to the series, but we were able to have Moises come on board. So thanks a lot to everybody that was involved in making that happen.
Yeah, we really do appreciate it. And it just, oh my God. I don't know how many times we mentioned the word excited in this whole episode. Like, so if you're playing a game, now's the time to take a shot every time we say excited.
So what were your favorite parts about the show?
So watching part one, it brought me back to a lot of nostalgia, like all that 80s, the music, you know, hearing Jody Watley. I mean, it's just like, dun, 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 dun. And then also mixing it with Selena's music. It was pretty neat. So it just brought back a lot of memories.
Yeah, I mean, I love that she was influenced by people like Madonna and Janet Jackson and Cyndi Lauper. And so I love that throwback feeling, you know, and how they incorporated like the fashion and the wigs and the jewelry and the accessories. And you know, just a reminder, like, this is what happened in the 80s, you know?
Yeah.
you know, this is how it was. This is how it looked. Yep, she did wear all gold. She did wear all silver. Those wigs were like, that's how her hair looked like, you know? So, and also there was a lot of...
Selena was a risk taker, so...
Yeah, she definitely was a risk taker. And she was very artsy, like she was very crafty. And she, you know, you can see throughout the series how every time, it's almost like every, you know, Latina in my household, you know, in our households, when they get super excited about something, when they get super excited about something, the first thing they think about is like, oh my God, what am I going to wear? That was so Selena, you know? Even like me working with Becky G for like many years, I just remember like, I'm pretty sure that's like the number one priority is like, how am I going to look? What am I going to wear?
Right. No. You know? And also not only that, I related to it because of my family, because it just like, oh my God, I remember my dad used to make me do things that I didn't want to do. Like how A.B. Quintanilla told, you know, A.B. to jump right into the dumpster and get those peach cans. Everybody's talking about them peach cans. Right. And then
you were in the dumpsters?
Not in the dumpsters, but my like, my dad and like would make us go on top of the roof for Christmas every year and put up the lights because I was the only one that was flaquito out of the whole family and everybody was, you know, just a little bit more pleasantly plump. But I mean, I didn't want to do it. Or he would make me go mow the lawn. He would say like, hey, go put the lawnmower out for the jardinero. I'm like, well, who's the gardener? When did we get a gardener? You're the gardener. I was like, no, come on, dad. I don't want to do that. I don't want to get dirty. And then another part like that made me cry was that part where Suzette was handing the drumsticks to her fan. And she thought the fan was for Selena, but it was actually for her. That was like, oh my God, I was crying.
There was a couple of parts that I cried. And this is obviously spoiler alert. We're going to talk about everything. I am very surprised when people criticize the show and are asking about like certain things. And I'm like, don't you know that there's a part two coming?
Mm-hmm.
Like, trust me, we're going to get there. You're going to see all of the, you know, super global pop star that she became in part two. But I, as a big fan, I appreciate the details, the dialogue, the step-by-step, you know, Some people were like, oh, it's kind of, there's some parts that are kind of boring. And I'm like, no, those are the good parts. Like, I love seeing the dialogue and how things happen and how songs were made, you know? And going back to what we keep saying throughout this episode, these are facts. This is history. This is how it happened.
Yeah.
You know?
And just to end off real quick, and not on a somber note, but like, this is, Selena's story is one that touches me a lot because, whew, I'm not going to cry. My mom, before she met my dad, she was raising my sister on her own. You know, she was a single mother. She was raising her daughter. And growing up, my sister reminded me a lot of Selena. I mean, she was smart. She was full of joy, full of life. She was the popular girl in school. Always had friends, literally always had friends. If anything, our house was always full of her friends, and they'd come over and I'd be in my little tarantarans and, you know, running around, being an annoying little brother. And, you know, Selena's story resonates with my sister's story as well, because she also got to experience what it was like to fall in love. And she had just started high school. She was 15 years old and she's getting to know this boy, and my parents don't approve of that boy. And like, wow, what a similar story to Selena's. And, you know, it's crazy that, you know, my sister had such an impact on people. And then at 7 years old, my sister had passed away at 15 in a car accident. That was the first time I ever actually experienced death. I mean, I didn't know what it was. I didn't know how to process it. And, you know, I know my mom was devastated because I was her firstborn, her only girl. It was so, so hard. And also at the funeral, like, I remember vividly, the entire church was packed outside, inside, everywhere around. People would be coming to the house as well, leaving flowers. Just so much love that my sister had brought. And, you know, no parent wants to ever lose their child, and that's the hardest thing. Losing somebody, you can just never get them back. No matter how hard you try in remembering them and doing things and just honoring them, you know, they can't come back. But the beauty about, you know, death is that we were able to celebrate them in life and continue to hold their memory in our hearts. And, you know, my mom tried so much, and she was depressed for 2 years. And I understand. I understand how this family feels, you know. And, you know, to the day that my mom passed, she was never the same. But she was a strong woman, and she got through it, and she took care of us. She raised us well, you know, and my heart pours out for the family. And I understand that, you know, like, people start saying, like, well, why you keep doing this, and why you keep making more Selena stuff? It's not that. They're coping with this in their own way by honoring her memory that way for them. And this is not only just in memory for them, but to complete a dream that she wanted, you know, for her. And it's accomplished. And that's what she's, you know, that's what Selena's doing, even when she was alive. And now after death, her dream is still continuing on and being that example for millions and millions to come. And yes, that's the important message that we need to get out from this, from watching these series or whatever comes out of Selena, you know?
Yeah, I think family is like the key piece here, right? And so we do see a lot of people commenting that, like, oh, just let her rest in peace, you know, or like, why does the family keep making money off of her? And, you know, we're not going to judge how they're coping. But I am super thankful. As a fan, like, thank you for continuing to give us Selena, you know, whether it's a series or a DVD concert coming soon, which I heard is coming soon, makeup line, fashion. You know, Selena wanted these things. If Selena was still here, she would have these collaborations with these fashion brands. She would have makeup lines. She would have, a pizza line. I don't know, a restaurant.
She, like, has a boombox already coming out.
Yeah, she has a boombox that's, I think it's sold out, and they're bringing it back. And, you know, she has her own Funko Pop dolls that are coming out, which I got one before it sold out.
Which one did you get?
I got her in the burgundy outfit.
The one that I really liked was the one in the dress where she's singing rancheras. I love that one.
Yeah. And, you know, like, her makeup for MAC always sells out. So I have The Como La Flor lipstick.
Jose is literally the ultimate fan, guys. So,
and I have all her. I have all her drinking. The drinking cups in collaboration with Stripes for the Fiesta de la Flor festival. Thanks to my friend Amanda, who got those for me in Texas. But yeah, I mean, all of my followers and all of my family and friends know how big Selena is for me in my life as well. And being able to work with the Quintanilla family at one point and work with Jennifer Lopez, who I relate so much to Selena. Growing up, I mean, I still remember the day that we found out, March 31st, 1995, when we heard it on the radio. We happened to be outside, you know, just like in the series, how her family would have those carne asadas outside. Mm-hmm. We were doing that in our garage. And I remember on the radio just hearing the breaking news that Selena had been shot, you know, not even like announced dead at that point, but just her going through this. And so we were living right outside of Houston, and we took that road trip straight to Corpus Christi that same night. You know, the next morning we were there. Front page news, Corpus Christi. I remember collecting the newspapers from my family. I was in elementary school, you know, and I was a big fan. And going through this, it was so traumatic. And so you see in the movie, or I don't know if it's going to come up in the series, where you see like all the fans outside of her house, kind of like when Kobe Bryant died, where you leave all the roses and all the candles. That was me. We were part of that. Like all the posters along the fence, you could see her car, you can see her house and everything like that. And the paparazzis and all the news around the world flew in to cover this. It was a big story, you know? I remember those days in 1995, and she's always been a big part of my life, you know? And so I visited the grave, which is not a mess. You know, I read a comment earlier today that her grave is a mess. Her grave is beautiful. You know, I have videos. It's amazing. And that city and that family love Selena. The museum, I've gone to it. It's spectacular. You're going to have such a good time. You know, everything is so well put together. Her home, everything, you know, everything about her. I just love the detail.
And that's what's amazing about the series. Don't feed into social media or, you know, whatever you hear on social media. Go watch this for your own opinion. Get your own opinion out of it and find out what you can take from it. That's the whole point. And we want you to just be really excited about it. Pinche palabra de excited. You gotta love it.
Yeah. Make sure to continue following us at the Homo Homie Podcast on social media. And the Homo Homie is Eric, and I'm D. Jose Resendez. And click the link in our bio, because we have a lot of amazing features and press and links that we like to share there. We even have a voicemail feature where you can drop us a note. And for this episode, I would like for everyone to just please share this episode with a big fan. You know, share it with a fan, a big Selena fan, a big Selena the movie fan, a big J-Lo fan, you know, a big Quintanilla fan, a Tejano. Help us get this episode out there, because we want people to see this perspective and this point of view.
Yeah.
But also, I challenge you to share it with the hater. Share it with someone who wasn't as satisfied, so that they can see the work and the dedication that it takes to make a production like this.
Yeah. I mean, again, we're coming at this respectively, and everyone's entitled to their opinions respectively. So it's just, you know, it's what you get out of it. At the end of the day, it's what you can relate to. So, all right, guys. Well, thank you so much. And just make sure you are hitting that subscribe button, so when we put up a new episode, you're able to get that little ping and notification. And there you go. You hear our little stories. All right, guys. Big thank you to Moises Zamora for stopping by and sharing the Netflix Selena series with us. Big thank you to Roman Navarrete for going ahead and bringing on Moises. Thank you, Jose, for sharing your Selena stories and also being my co-host, because you're always amazing and you always help me out. And thank you to the listener just for stopping by, supporting us, and listening to our episodes. All right, guys. So with that being said, make sure to be good or be good at it, but be safe. We love you. Bye.
Bye. Ciao.